Blog Talk Radio.
What you do, don't know if I need to reassure you, my life will be purposeless without you. If I want it, when I ask you, you inspire me to be better, you challenge me for the better. Sit back and let me pour out my love letter. Let me help you, take off your shoes, untie your shoestrings, take off your cufflinks. Don't you wanna eat food, let me feed you, let me run your bath water, whatever you desire. I'll fly ya, sing you a song, game on. I'll brush your hair, help you put your do-rag on. Wanna put a rug, want a manicure, baby I'm yours, I wanna cater to you, boy.
Let me cater to you, cause baby this is your day. Do anything for my man, baby you blow me away. I've got the flipper, your dinner, your dessert and so much more. Anything you want, just let me cater to you. Inspire me from the heart, nothing tear us apart. You're all I want in a man. I put my life in your hands. I've got the slipper, your dinner, your dessert, and so much more.
Away from you, making sure that I'm doing my part. Boy, is there something you need me to do? If you want it, there's a word. I know whatever I'm not fulfilling, another woman is willing. I'm gonna fulfill you, my body and spirit. I promise ya, I keep myself up, remain the same shit you fell in love with. I keep the tight, I keep my figure right. I'll keep my hair fixed, you rockin' the hottest outfit. When you come home, they tap me on my shoulder, I roll over. Baby, I heard you, I'm here to serve you. Love you need, give it is my joy. All I wanna do is cater to you, boy.
Let me cater to you, cause baby, this is your day. Do anything for my man, baby, you blow me away. I've got the flipper, your dinner, your dessert, and so much more.
Welcome back to us. That was Destiny Child singing Cater to You. Listen, that's what I want to do for you guys in 2014. I want to know what the audience wants us to do. We got three great panelists that join me each week, and we can tackle just about anything. So if you have a certain show that you think we ought to be looking into, please drop us a line at centerstageradio@yahoo.com, and we will definitely look into doing it. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the first Friday night's edition of Center Stage for 2014. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Happy New Year. And I hope that 2014 is your best year ever. And I mean that. We're back, fresh off hiatus. We're rested, excited about tackling the news headlines for 2014. AJ, Christopher, Carl, and I are all caught up on the news, and we want to tell you the stories in true center stage fashion, leaving nothing out and telling you what the mainstream media didn't. So tonight, we got quite a bit of news. We're going to be talking about the Fukushima toxic waste spilling over, hitting the West Coast. We're going to talk about the H1N1 virus that's going around. We're going to talk about the record cold temperatures that we're all been feeling across all 50 states. And we're also going to talk about the Colorado principal that was fired because she refused to stamp the hands of, I guess you could say, low-income students who were on the lunch program. She refused to do that, and she was fired. We're going to talk about private first class Lavina Johnson. In 2005, she mysteriously died in her tent in Iraq, and they're calling it a suicide, but many believe it was rape and murder. Also, we're going to talk about the unemployment benefits being reduced to 26 weeks. And we're also going to talk about fluoride in our drinking water and whether or not that's safe. And later tonight, we're going to have a phone interview with Miss Maggie Rhodes. She's the mother of Ashton, who is a young 3-month-old. I think he's a little older now, but he was 3 months when she took him in for circumcision that resulted in his penis being cut off. And so she's going to tell us about the updates on that case. So, y'all, let's get started. The guys are here. I'm so excited. Listen, guys, I missed y'all. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Miss you,
Happy
too.
New
Happy
Year.
New Year to everybody.
Listen, we're rested, right? Are we all rested?
Yes. It's a great New Year. Happy everybody.
No. No.
No. Well, listen, you had 2 weeks off. You should be. Listen, I know it was 2 weeks without pay, but anyway, we're so glad, or I'm so glad to have you guys back. I really am. I missed y'all, and I think I needed the break, and I think we all did. But there's been a lot going on in the news, so I'm excited to be back talking with you guys about everything that's been going on. I mean, it's just, I don't even know where to begin. There's so much going on. But I think we all have been feeling the record-breaking temperatures, so why don't we start there? Is anybody surprised at how cold it got over the holidays?
Well, it's been progressively going there, Carrie. It's been a couple of years, and, you know, I think we had a show earlier where we were talking about the hurricanes and all the adverse weather that was coming. So after all the hurricanes and the multiple tornadoes and all that, the next thing to come is the cold, especially when you – when you do anything wrong to Mother Nature, she's going to retreat and come back harshly on you. So I really think something's been done to the atmosphere and to Mother Nature. You know, I don't know from where. I don't know if it's Star Wars or whatever it is, but it's been something done because this is, all these things have never occurred before.
Never. I mean, AJ, Carl, and I are all in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. How cold did it get here?
I got a couple.
It got burr cold.
Yes. It was extremely cold. One day, y'all, our heat went out for 8 hours, and I'm going to tell you, listen, that was murder for me. And I could just, I took a moment to think how blessed I was it was just 8 hours because there's so many people that are homeless that are facing the element on a day-to-day basis. So I did consider myself very blessed. That was just 8 hours, but it got cold, y'all. I'm telling you, it was cold. And some people are saying this is connected to global warming. Do y'all believe that? Anybody? Oh, thank you so much.
Well,
I think it could be
okay, anyway, who was that? Who did I hear?
I said, I think it could be connected to global warming.
You do?
Well, it's getting colder. That would mean that the sun will be moving further away from the Earth. I would expect that the sun would be moving closer to the Earth. So maybe that's not what I was going to say there. I thought it'd be getting hotter. You know, as you know, the years go by, it looked like the Texas weather has been changing. So it's getting hotter.
Somebody said that you could blame basically record heat or record cold on global warming if you wanted to look at it like that. You could blame drought and flood.
I think the wording is incorrect as far as the way we think, because the global warming means that there's glaciers and things that have been there for hundreds of years that are melting. So it's not talking about our direct temperature. It's talking about the effect that it has on the ozone and our atmosphere and this Antarctica that just came through. So that's what global warming is, that globally it's getting hotter in regions where there's never been heat. Which would inadvertently affect everywhere else. And that was one of those everywhere else things.
You think? Christopher, what do you think?
I also think in terms of as AJ is talking about, I think the correct definition or the correct process is, like in Chicago, I mean, normally around this time of year, you know, we're going to get some snow, we're going to get a cold snap and so forth, but it dropped down to like negative 15, and with the wind chill, it was like negative 30. So I think what's also happening with those, as they're saying, global warming or with the glaciers melting, is that it throws the seasons off. So in essence, I think the seasons, time-wise, they're falling in sync, but they're it's like the seasons are confused, because I'm in Indiana now, and they had a cold snap. But now the temperature is, within 3 days of the cold snap, it's hit it back up to like 40 degrees, and now it's raining. So I think the seasons are being affected in terms of shortening the seasons that season should normally be in.
And, you know, and some people, conspiracy theorists, say that there is no such thing, rather, as a global warming, and, you know, all of that's just not true. So we really don't know. But what I found in the research for this show was that these are some of the numbers and that really kind of freak people out. These are different areas of the country where the temperatures are, like, so different from what they normally are. Like in Alabama, they had a record low, and I'm talking about that record was way back when, where it had never been colder than 5 degrees. Well, it hit 4. So they're like, oh, my God, it's getting cold, cold, cold. And then Mobile, where it had never been any lower than 8, it dropped to 4. I mean, there were places like Detroit and Flint, Michigan, where it had never been lower in Detroit than 5 degrees. It got minus 14. Flint, Michigan, it had never been lower than minus 10. It got minus 14. You know, that's pretty cold. I mean, we haven't even – have we ever seen the minus numbers in Texas? I don't think we know what minus is in Texas. But these people are talking about minus 14. That's like crazy weather. In Tennessee, which I was very surprised, a place called Kingsport, Tennessee, had their record low was 5 degrees. It hit minus 1. West Virginia, their record low was 0. It hit minus 8. Lewisburg, West Virginia, the low was 7. It reached minus 8. Morganstown, their record low was 4, and it hit minus 7. So just to give you an idea of, you know, how in areas where either the record had not been, you know, anywhere near that cold in years and years and years, all of a sudden it's hitting below the record lows. And then in other areas where it had been pretty cold, it's gotten even colder. So what are we to think? I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's scary.
I think there's something to that, because when I was deployed over in Kuwait and Iraq, it was getting, and that was in 2010-11, it was getting a lot cooler, not really cold, but cooler than it normally had been. And just last year, remember, it snowed in Egypt. And I forget how many years since there's been any relic of snow in the Middle East.
Oh, okay. And, you know, and a couple of weeks back, y'all, you know, we talked about, well, more than a couple, but, you know, we talked about GridX a while back. And I think it was Khufu that mentioned, or Carl that mentioned a couple of weeks ago that, you know, all of a sudden we had that cold snap that came through the first time, and we wondered, like, wow, was GridX just a dry run for them getting ready to hit the grids and shut us all off utilities, and now it's gotten even colder. Do y'all think that's connected in any way?
Well, But I don't think it's connected, but I think they would definitely profit off of it. Because, you know, you hear them now saying, well, the electricity is going to go up. But during the wintertime, people use about the same amount of electricity anyway, because if it's on 74, 75, regardless of what it is outside, if your electricity don't go off, that's where it's standing. You're not putting it up to 80. So I think there's a constant use of the power, but they want to make it seem like more people are using power, so it's draining power, so they need to charge you more for the power you use. And I think everybody looks at it as, how can I benefit from this cold snap that came through? How can I benefit from this heat wave? You know, everybody's looking to benefit, especially the major corporations, because corporations are now people.
Well, you know, I'm going to make a footnote on that for those people, because we did, and you might go back for those of you who have not been listening to the show for a while or just recent listeners. If you go back in our archives, we did several shows on smart meters, and you really might get to know your smart meter very well, because when they initially put the one on my house, my utility bill went from $100, and this was just as summer was beginning here, to $300 the very next month, to $500 the next month. And what was so odd about it is each time it went up, I was doing more and more to not use much electricity. And at the same time, it was spiking. So first of all, I had to get in contact with my utility provider and say, listen, there's a problem, because I'm sitting in my house with a temperature at 80 degrees and y'all are saying I'm using more utilities. And so, you know, after a couple of shows, they saw it my way. But after that, one thing I'll say to everybody, especially with this cold snap, you really need to make sure that you know how much you're paying per, what is it, kilowatt, y'all? Is that what it's called, per kilowatt? Yeah, you need to know what you're paying per kilowatt, because, you know, if you're paying 13 cents per kilowatt and you can get it as cheap as 8, that makes a great difference in your bill. And so just, you know, FYI for somebody out there who may be shocked when they open their utility bill next month, you might check and see what you're paying. That's totally off subject, but I just thought I'd throw it in there just for somebody who may get a heart attack when they get next month's bill. Okay, y'all, let's move on, because we got a lot to cover tonight. Let's talk about this H1N1. I mean, you know, the first time I heard H1N1, I don't know about y'all, was in 2009 when Vice President Joe Biden made the comment about H1N1 that scared everybody. And I don't know if everybody remembers like I do, but Vice President Joe Biden said that he was advising his own family to avoid confined places, to stay off commercial airlines and even subways, because the new swine flu, he said, was basically so bad that, you know, it was just not something that you wanted to be in contact with in, like, confined spaces. That's what he said. And what I remember about that is after he made that statement, it scared me to death, and I thought, what am I going to do? And then shortly after that, there was a lot of coverage on it, and the whole issue of H1N1 disappeared. And now all of a sudden, it's back. Does anybody remember it like I do?
But I don't remember that exactly. But, Terry, one thing you have to take note of right now is that there was a couple of things on the news, different news channels, saying that the flu shots you were getting didn't actually help for the H1N1.
Exactly.
They're still saying that you need to get the flu because they're running out of vaccine. I'm like, if it don't help, why are you rushing out to get the vaccine?
I don't know. I mean, I heard the same thing. I did hear that. And I was wondering the same thing, like, okay, so I'm going to go get the shot, and that's going to cover one strain, but it ain't going to cover the H1N1 strain. I remember thinking the same thing. Christopher, you work in a hospital with sick people all the time. What do you think? Should people be getting the flu shot? I mean, how do you get an H1N1 shot?
There's a lot of controversy, and the main thing is that both of you are hitting on the key points. H1N1 is think of it like this, it's kind of like a mutated or relic influenza, but not directly influenza. It's not the type A or type B. So you're right. They're talking or they're promoting influenza for influenza A and B, then that's appropriate. But if they're talking H1N1, there is a vaccine. But the problem is that I think they're promoting one as if it covers the other, and it doesn't. It has no effect on it because it's a total different strain. H1N1 is the is like the swine flu. So they're two different viral entities that one medication won't affect the other because it has a resistance to it. So people have to be clear when they're saying something. If they're talking about a specific vaccine for influenza, which is the flu shot, that's in sync, but influenza won't cover H1N1 and vice versa. So unfortunately, what it ends up being is that I was a R&H, R&D in development at Abbott Laboratories, and the one thing I do know from research and development is that when strains mutate and change, you can't keep giving the same vaccine because now, unfortunately, that vaccine can become harmful because it doesn't provide coverage for the very thing that you're supposed to be giving it for. So it has to be aligned with the specific vaccine with the specific viral intent. Otherwise, it's the pharmaceutical companies and the government is just making money because it's not going to help you. It's only going to make you sick, really.
Okay, so if I was to say to you what you just said, you would say, in essence, the flu shot is not going to help me with H1N1.
No, because it's a different virus that does not react. And part of the problem with influenza, even though over time, that's like it could be with penicillin. You can give penicillin for a lot of bacterial infections. But if you give it too much, the virus, well, it starts to become very smart, and it can supersede penicillin. So then you have to go to what's called the third generation of cephalosporin, which is basically another medication to attack, but then it does it more in a broad way. So you really have to know what you're dealing with in terms of giving somebody something, and you can't just – I think sometimes – in the medical community, I think sometimes they just do things because it's always been done that way, not necessarily because it's effective.
So let me ask you this. Does anyone feel like the number of flu cases or the deaths, the deaths due to flu cases this season would warrant them considering it a pandemic right now? I mean, the numbers don't – I think the numbers I'm hearing are maybe in the 20s. Isn't that what y'all are hearing, AJ and Carl?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, but I'm saying in America, there's always statistics and an acceptable amount of loss. You know, just like, for example, Toyota, you know, they knew they had a defective car and they knew it would blow up if you got hit in the back or whatever. But they waited until a certain number of people were killed in Toyotas, then they went through this whole thing. They're talking about Toyota's the best car on the market, but it has to be because they never kill people in it. It's the same thing with the flu, that there's a number of acceptable losses while they do trial and error on what's going to fix it or what's going to take care. Although they won't tell you directly, it's like, well, we don't know if this is going to help, but let's try this.
And see, I'm hearing, you know, there's alternative medicines that you can use, and I'm not telling our listeners. I didn't say Carrie's saying because Carrie don't know for sure, but this is what Carrie does. Carrie uses, and anybody can weigh in on this if y'all feel the same as I do. I drink lemon and water. I take a probiotic, and I take vitamin C every day. Those are the things I do, and I rarely get sick in terms of flu-like symptoms and things like that. But I don't know if that's going to work for everybody, but that's what I do. Does anybody, you know, have – because I don't take the flu shot. I want to put that out there. I don't take the flu shot, but that's what I do to stay healthy, you know.
I take the – there's a vitamin C in those packets that's 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C. I take those with Immogreen, which is a superfood, and that's what I drink every morning, and that's – so far, you know, I've been sick people around me, and I ain't get sick, so I don't know if it's working, but it's working for me.
I need to get out some of those formulas.
No, that's what I do. I mean, seriously, because, you know, I now don't get me wrong, I don't shake hands a lot, y'all, and I don't hug folks during flu season, but if I can help it. But, I mean, in terms, that's really pretty much all I do.
Well, and I think that is good because different remedies, home remedies, different things that have been researched, new things that have come on the market, I think people should be educated and they should stay up with what works best for them. But I think in the medical community, particularly the research community, kind of what has happened is that once you get a product that does work, it has a good type of efficacy, but you don't take it back to the lab, you don't try and tweak some of the things that was originally designed, I think that's part of the problem, for instance, like with the influenza and with a lot of other vaccines and medications. I mean, with vaccines, most of that is in a controlled environment, whether they're using lab rats or so forth, but you need to take the current influenza strain, and they need to, because I think a lot of what they don't do is retest to see if the current vaccine, the way that they're formulated, actually affects influenza, and you can inject that into lab rats and so forth. So there's ways that you can actually check to see if there's resistance, if there's other things, but I think they've gotten away from a lot of that since the FDA has already approved it, and I think that's part of the problem because as they receive and you get these new super strains, they're not doing enough to try and combat the super strains. They're just basically saying, just keep taking the influenza shot, which is not really effective.
Okay, exactly. I have a question for you. Okay, if you, let's say every year you go to the car show and they make all these brand new cars they're going to put out in 2015 now. So you got all these cars made, but 2015 they changed the EPA and changed everything else. You still going to put those cars on the market. Same thing with the vaccine. They got this formula for this vaccine. They already estimated how much money they're going to make. They going to make their money. It don't have to work.
They just scare you to death to go.
Well, that's true. But with the influenza specifically, that's not a vaccine. That's not an immunization that they keep on the shelf 12 months out of the year. They make
I know. I know because they're running out. They make it like this.
But and I guess what I'm saying in terms of so they don't do that, kind of like with the discontinued model versus the new model and still going to put the discontinued model out, what I'm saying is that I don't think there's an emphasis on the research and development so that when they do put that new model out, it's an improved and it's been proven. Most of the formulation for influenza vaccine is the same.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm saying they have the formula. They don't make it because it has a shelf life.
Correct.
So
you're saying they don't make a continuous batch.
Yeah,
they don't make batches and batches and batches, is what you're saying.
Yeah, the end of this
Well, no, they
is,
do. But they only make it in a specific time of the year, and then after that it's released. And then once it's used up, they don't make any more until the next year.
Exactly, because the end of this month, this flu season is over. So you have to the end of this month to get your vaccine.
And so they push and push so that all that vaccine gets used up and it won't expire because the anything left over from this year can't be used next year.
That makes sense.
It's money. You're trying to get rid of it.
Yeah, pharmaceutical companies losing money. That's exactly what's going on. Y'all, if you just tuned in, you come Center Stage tonight. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Tonight with me is Carl Mitchell, A.J. Houston, and Christopher Buns, my panelists, as we're tackling the topic straight out of the headlines. We're talking about news from across the country and our world. If you'd like to weigh in on tonight's topic, call us up at 347-850-8390 and let us hear from you. We're talking about Fukushima H1N1, the Colorado principal who got fired for refusing to stamp the hands of kids on the free lunch program. We're going to talk about private first class Lavina Johnson. She was found murdered and raped in her tent in Iraq. We're also going to talk about the unemployment benefits being reduced to 26 weeks. We're going to talk about fluoride in your drinking water. And we've already talked about the record cold temperatures across all 50 states. So, guys, what I want to piggyback on is something that Christopher just talked about was lab rats, because you know what, we're gonna segue over into talking about fluoride and is it safe in your drinking water. And one thing they did was did a lab test on lab rats, and they fed them or gave them fluoride in the drinking water. And guess what? It didn't turn out so good. The study was published by the Journal of American Science in 2010 that showed how long exposure to sodium fluoride in rats hampered their ability to remember where their food was located in the maze. They had memory loss, lower weight, higher anxiety levels, and they showed hair loss. Okay, so I'm sitting here going, listen, if it's hurting the rats, why are we putting it in our drinking water?
Now, why are they putting it in your toothpaste?
This is true. Well, see, you know, they can kind of get away and say, well, you know, toothpaste, you don't swallow your toothpaste. But drinking water, we're drinking that. We're actually drinking that.
But the drinking water has always been tested and says that at acceptable levels, and we don't even know if they were telling us the truth then.
This is true. This is true.
And actually, that is very true, and it's a very big black eye on the scientific community as well as the cities, because I think, once again, they don't do their homework, and they don't not just look at research and data, but look at the clinical application of what is good and what is bad. And sometimes in the midst or the guise of corporations that produce certain products and services, they continue to go forth with them, even though they may be causing detrimental harm. Fluoride, so that everybody understands and that the listeners understand, fluoride is something that is what's termed as ubiquitous, means that it's essentially in a lot of different things naturally, that occurs mm-hmm. naturally. The problem becomes is when you give too much or you infuse too much, whether it's in a fluoride toothpaste or the water. In most cities, if they did nothing at all, didn't add any fluoride, there's a thing, a level that they measure how much fluoride is in any given product, a test you can do fairly easy. But in most water, if the city didn't treat it, it would have approximately, I believe it's, I think it's like 2 to 4 parts per million, meaning that that's the amount of fluoride that's detected. But then what the city, most cities, and I think the in Dallas where they had the protest, the city adds approximately 3 to 4 more parts per million, which makes it 7.
Mm-hmm.
The EPA has already said that a max of 4 parts per million is effective enough. You don't need to add any more. This is on their own website. But for some reason, the city is adding a higher concentration than that. That is where a lot of the problems come in, because people are unaware that their water in general is being treated with more fluoride than necessary. That's where
we're in. But tell somebody putting fluoride in the water.
Say what?
I say tell them why they're putting fluoride in the water.
Because it's almost down.
No. Wait a minute. Fluoride has some beneficial effects.
But that's what I'm saying. Tell them why they're putting fluoride in the water.
It doesn't have those effects.
When it goes from city to city, and you have, but see how many cities are on one reservoir and how many cities are fed by one particular, I guess, facility. And then you'll see why they're adding more, because when it breaks down and sent somewhere else, it's still setting. So they've estimated, but they always say it's an acceptable loss if we lose about 10 or 15 people, you know, in prayer areas over the water.
That's true, but once again, even if the authorities added, like you're saying, somewhere between what the EPA says and the max of 7, if you just went and you did random sampling, you would have a better idea of maybe how you would be able to adjust that than if you did nothing at all. Because then if you continue to add more, the numbers are showing that is causing a harmful effect. So that means that the amount that they're adding is not safe. And that was what the protest was about in Dallas, because those folks they were backed with scientific data for that particular area, that population, where it was harmful and that it had caused over 100 instances with real, really bad side effects.
I think that rally was actually in Austin, but yeah, I think that that's exactly what they did. They went down there with data, and you know the thing is, and I'm just gonna put this out there tonight, just for information purposes. For those people who sit around and think I'm just not gonna say nothing and somebody else is gonna fight the battle, that's a bad thing to do. I mean, everybody's got to do their part. I mean, whether or not, you know, you have an issue with fluoride or you got an issue with something else, you need to stand up for something. I mean, really, you just need to stand up for something. And so for those people that went out there and rallied against fluoride, I wish I'd known about the rally. I probably would have tried to attend it. I mean, that's just how I feel about it, because if they're putting stuff in our drinking water that's dumbing us down, I mean, if that's why a lot of these kids have ADHD and ADD, that's a reason to rally. You know, so just putting
that's
that out there, I'm not going to. Huh?
That's right. I mean, you know, be involved in something, you know, some type of movement or whatnot, especially something constructive like that. And that really can, you know, affects all of us. You know, so that's a big concern of the entire population, really, if they're putting too much fluoride, dropping too much fluoride into our water. So,
one other thing real quick. The American Dental Association, I have a friend who's a dentist, and I just rolled it off of him. I looked some stuff up, but I just asked him in terms of what he thought. But they don't recommend that you use basically tap water or fluoride water or additives put in by the city for babies and baby formula. They recommend that you get baby water or water without fluoride in it. So they're already letting you know from the onset of a baby that they are already perceiving, just based on the data, that there's too much fluoride, and it creates problems because kids at that age, their teeth have not, they're just starting to develop. And too much fluoride, everything from your tooth enamel decaying, Alzheimer's, decrease in bone density, and there's been a spike in individuals with complaints of thyroid function problems from drinking a lot of the tap water. And Dick Gregory said this. He said, why do you think folks who can afford to buy bottled water are buying bottled water? So he kind of put that out there. There's a reason behind that.
And I agree with that 100%, because I don't drink tap water. And it really spun off the fact that the water in the area that I was in had an odor to it. And literally, and I'm not kidding, when I would drink the water, it felt like something was crawling under my skin. And that's when I began to boil the water and put it through, like, what are those, Brita filters or whatever those things are. And I began to do that. And then I just found out that it was better to just do distilled water for me. So I just moved to that. But I literally found that in the area that I was in. So just out there, food for thought. Listen, y'all, we're going to move on to talking about unemployment benefits being reduced to 26 weeks. What the heck is Washington thinking? I'm sorry. They are going to have chaos in the street in a minute. Why would they do that? Why would you wait until there's no jobs? Why would you wait until you've outsourced I don't know how many jobs? Why would you wait until you're reducing food stamp benefits and then all of a sudden say we're going to cut unemployment benefits to 26?
Well, because that makes whenever they decide to take the minimum wage up just a little bit, people will be happy by them not giving what they want, because when you put pressure on anything, they're willing to accept anything to get out of some of the pressure. And, you know, they've been going at this for a minute, you know, with the, you know, when they first shut down the government, that was part of the things that was in there that was stopped. They extended
what is $10 an hour if you're going to get 20 hours a week?
They don't care. they're still giving tax breaks to the rich. They're still trying to help other corporations. They're still giving billions of dollars to the oil companies, and they're still paying the equities for farmers, and they're still paying all these people that are making jobs. At least they say they're gonna make jobs with the money they give them, but they don't. They just put it in the bank.
I'm sorry, was that you, Kufu? So you're saying that they're saying that they, I kind of missed that, normally.
You know, I've been trying to keep up with that pay equality, you know, inequality, whatnot, and that unemployment benefits being extended.
No, they're being reduced. They're being cut off at 26 weeks.
So you're saying they're going to cut them off at 26 weeks now for people?
Yeah, and some people, I think, didn't they go up to 99 weeks for some people, y'all, and now that all of a sudden you're cut off at 26 weeks?
Oh, okay, yeah, I know that they had so many weeks when you first start, and then the rest of the weeks were extended benefits, but they had, you know, not passed the budget on by having
seen where they was cutting off at 26 weeks, so I guess they are.
Yeah, they're cutting off at 26. And so the issue becomes, you know, AJ just mentioned a minute ago about putting people under so much pressure. One thing I know about putting things in a pressure cooker is, you know, when it gets to a certain temperature, you know, it explodes. You know, that's what pressure cookers do. And so I think when you're putting people in a pressure cooker and you're taking everything away from them, you're taking their rights away, you're taking, you know, or trying to take their guns away, and you're trying to take, you know, the amount of hours they work, and you're trying to, it's just too much. It's just too much. And I think after a while, that's why you see so many people snapping.
Well,
anybody agree with that?
Right. And the bad part is that almost when you look up anything dealing with the unemployment benefits, and the previous law that has expired that kind of allowed 47 weeks max after a person uses the state-funded fund, and they want to cap it at the 26 weeks. But the bill for the extension that they have before now, it's going to change the law that used to be a max of 47 weeks, and it is the law is basically trying to request that it be a max of 31 weeks. And what they're saying is that the difference between the 47 and the 31 weeks will save $8 billion. But what they're not saying is that we're also at a time where the rate of unemployment has been spiking up and down and probably has been more consistently higher. And so it would reason that people need the benefits more now than ever, but they seem to be backpedaling. But what I meant to say is that even after you read through all that, there is nothing in here that has any degree of compassion and reasonable understanding of what the politicians and the lawmakers should be doing. They're doing this as a guise to simply, in this particular case, save money. But they're not saving money on a lot of the other pork barrel and things that are a waste that they're doing.
But how much money did we lose in the shutdown? I mean, that shutdown that should have never happened. A bunch of little boys and little girls on the Hill, you know, basically grandstanding, you know, at the expense of the American people. And there were so many billions of dollars lost during that shutdown. And so now, I mean, are the unemployed going to be the people that are going to have to suffer as a result of how much money they lost during the shutdown? Yes, sir. Anyway.
You know, I think, you know, they have what they said earlier about the money being a factor, you know, I agree with them on that. But I also think that another factor that they still want to punish the voting population who are the Democrats or whatever, who voted for President Obama, who reelected President Obama. So they still want against the poor, you know, to punish those who re-voted this administration back in.
Well, you think everybody unemployed voted for President Obama?
No, I don't think everybody votes for President Obama, but I do think that, you know, the Republicans get out during midterm election, and those who are most affected by the unemployment rate are people who voted for President Obama.
Okay.
Terry, do you remember when they actually, somebody videotaped with their telephone the conversation Mitt Romney had at a little small function he had that was like a $20,000 dinner, and he was talking about 50%.
The 47%. That was the video.
Yeah, 47%. Yeah. And see that's what they believe. I'm saying that is an actual number that they estimate of us to be.
47%. That what you're saying?
Yeah, he said 47% of the people on welfare want the government to give them something. They're not trying. They're looking for a handout. They're not trying to work. They're not trying to do this. So that's who they're trying to affect.
You know, and I see things like that happen on a daily basis where people don't realize, but by grace, they just get those few little words, but by grace, there goes I. And so I think for all those people who are lacking compassion for the homeless, lacking compassion for the people who are unemployed, lacking compassion for people who have less than you, that is sheer ignorance because it's just but by grace. I mean, I really believe that you can wake up in the morning rich and then the world we live in go to bed poor. I mean, that's just how fast stuff is changing today. So for all those who are lacking compassion for those less fortunate, good luck with that. I'm just putting good luck with that.
The only thing I agree with the Republicans on that issue is that they said something about a month ago. They said that the thing that most affects people for is being disenfranchised, well, not disenfranchised, but having more cash on hand or trying to get up off the poverty level is that policies that affect people. They agree that policy was one factor, but one of the other factors they said was that the lack of effort. You know, people lack the effort to try to better themselves. And I've seen that sometimes around when people who I see who are smart, younger people, whatnot, and they don't want to go back to school, and they get on the system, whatnot. And I've even, encouraged a couple people, you're very smart, and I've seen how smart they was, and they can make it in school, become a nurse or pharmaceutical or anything, but they worried about losing the housing. With housing, they really ain't paying anything. You drive a little piece of car and stuff, you can be making a six-figure salary or close to it or something. Just put a little effort towards it. So sometimes people do lack effort,
And I think effort, I think community activism, I think job training, job skills, identifying those individuals. I agree with all of that. But then again, too, I back up to two things that I think are critical. A, you have both Democrats and Republicans, mainly our white counterparts, that have always been entitled. So who are they to say something about someone, because they've always had the entitlement and advantage, approximately 250, 300 years here at start. The second thing is that in terms of individuals in the community, and I agree with you, you have some individuals that really don't have a lot of motivation, get up and go. Some are just trifling. That's not all. Or I think a significant portion in terms of those that are trying to get ahead. I think what this ends up coming down to is a lot of what Carrie and everybody is saying, compassion, because sometimes and a lot of times that's lost in the mix. And then number two, money, because the bottom line is that when have we heard any congressman or woman say that I'm going to take a cut in my salary? Because, by the way, on average, I make $150,000 to $174,000 a year per House representative congressman. That's not even including my insurance, my profit sharing, my 401k, my expense account. So I think a lot of these individuals on Capitol Hill are a bunch of thugs, and they're hypocrites because
you missed the numbers, though. You missed the numbers. See, right now, 70% of the people in Congress have made $1 million in the last year or so.
Mm-hmm.
That was the report that came out today. There are more millionaires in Congress than there's ever been in the history of Congress.
Mm-hmm. I read something like that.
They sold us out.
I do agree that some policies do affect people. Like, you have people coming out of prison and whatnot, and they want to integrate into society. And you have policies that hinder them, and some of these people are very talented and whatnot. They can really make it if some policies wouldn't hinder them from getting back to where they should be at, or should have been in the first place when they was in a different mindset. And so, policy does affect the economic growth too of some portion of the population.
I agree. Okay, y'all, listen. If you just tuned in, you've come. Center Stage tonight as we're talking about the topic straight out of the headlines. We're taking stories from across the country and from across our world. If you'd like to chime in on what we're talking about tonight, dial us up at 347-850-8390 and then press 1. Okay, guys, we're swiftly moving on because we got a lot of ground to cover, and we got Miss Maggie Rhodes at 925 tonight, so we got to move quickly. Former Colorado principal, Noelle Roney, says that she was fired because she would not shame students on free lunch programs. Now, they had some, I don't even know what I want to call that program, program at Peak to Peak Elementary, which is a charter school, some program where if you were, delinquent in your lunch account, they would stamp your hand. So can you imagine, being side by side with a student of, you know, another student whose, you know, parents are doctors and lawyers, and here you are, you know, your parents are barely making it, and, you know, you barely have enough money in your account to pay your lunch, and they stamp your hand, but the next kid, you know, has plenty of money to pay for the, you know, who does that? I mean, again, lacking compassion. I mean, so this particular principal, Ms. Roney, said, I refuse to do it. I won't do that. She told the cafeteria workers not to do it anymore. And for that reason, she was fired. What do y'all think?
Well, I think that is horrendous, and I applaud her for standing up. And in reading up on this, I mean, it was not only that she had approached them about the hand stamping issue. She also approached them about the disparity of what they were feeding the children. In other words, some kids got pizza while other kids got cheese sandwiches.
Sure did.
So they were also making a difference based on if you could afford or not afford. And then if you couldn't afford, they further identified you by giving you a substandard lunch. So this was like a two-pronged fold, and she really couldn't believe it. And they stopped it because she confronted the cafeteria manager and the rest of the school body board, and so they stopped it. But then 3 weeks later, a grandparent called her and said, hey, they're starting to snap their hands again. And now they're not even giving my son what they're supposed to be giving him for the free lunch program. They're giving him just cheese sandwiches.
Again, compassion. You know, what grown person sat at a desk and came up with that as a good idea for the lunch program? What ignorant person would do that? I mean, you know, the poor will be with you always, y'all. That is just, that's scripture. And so just to make anyone feel less than, especially a child, that's a mean individual. That's my take on that. And I applaud Noelle Roney for doing what she did. And I think, you know, if I had a school to hire at, I would hire her tomorrow, because I think she has compassion, and that's definitely needed in our schools today. Would y'all agree?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the whole board should be brought up on charges, because they said in the statement, they didn't really want to give a comment, but they said that they do not condone or tolerate this type of behavior. But they're the very ones that approved it in the first place. The school didn't just start this. This was brought before the school board.
Double talk. Double talk. And this was a charter school, y'all. So allegedly charter schools are allowed to set their own policies. Other schools in the Denver area, they don't do that. You know, they notify parents when the kids don't have money in their account rather than stamping their hands. So obviously this is something, you know, out of the norm that some person, again, lacking compassion, thought, you know, I'll fix them. I'll just stamp their hands and embarrass them in front of everybody and give them a lesser lunch, you know, because they don't have. You know, it seems to be a trend that's starting in our country, you know, with the homeless and with people who, you know, don't have as much. And I think that's a bad thing. And I think anybody who gets on board ships like that is going to eventually sink, because, you know, the Bible says, you know, the poor is going to be with you always. And I just can't see an adult, you know, hurting or harming or demeaning or making a child feel less than. I just have a problem with that. I don't have kids.
But Terry, I think the problems go back to the beginning of the Occupy movement.
Because
that's where everybody began to identify everybody in the Occupy movement as somebody homeless or some vagabond or somebody that didn't have anything else to do. But wait, they didn't look at it as a movement of people trying to evoke change. So when they began to group everybody into the same bundle, it was easy for them to decide to do this, because they feel like that's a part of that. I see the difference in people now.
Mm-hmm. I can go.
And you said the key thing, that when you get a broader type of unity and a broader type of front, you also get results, and then you get a lot of exposure, and you get a lot of people whose eyes are open. And I think you're absolutely right. The Occupy movement brought a lot of ethnicities together, And that can either be volatile or it can be very productive. And in this case, I think it was very productive. So we need to hopefully look towards that in the future in terms of having proper distribution of freedom.
Oh, and another thing, I agree. Another thing the principal said, you know, the reason she stopped this, there were some kids that were so embarrassed by the stamp that they wouldn't even get in line. So here are these kids who may not be getting adequate meals at home, and then they are ashamed to get in the line because they're going to be embarrassed, you know, by, you know, in front of the kids. Say what?
You know, one of the center put a bill forth, telling me he wanted the kids to sweep the floors, the halls.
Oh, sure. Sure did. Recently said that he felt like, who was it that he felt should sweep the floors? He felt like kids who needed something. I forgot. You're exactly right. Said that he thought that they should sweep the floors if they didn't have something. I forgot what it was. But we covered
yeah,
that in just.
Lunch.
If he what?
He said he needed to sweep the floor to earn their lunch.
Yeah, it was something like that. Yeah, you're
and
right.
I remember that. It's like absurd, but yet it's surreal because nobody asked the taxpayer anything. And the money that's being funded to these schools for those free lunch programs, I mean, it's absurd to try to do a double standard or a double jeopardy when the government has already allocated the money, they send it to the schools are just supposed to ensure that the money is utilized towards funding those individuals that have been identified as being eligible for that program. That's it. These people are starting to do all kind of other things that it was never intended to be. And I go back to, it's almost as though what should be, if you want to get hard-pressed and you want to stamp down on people, I think you have to go back to the compassion thing. But the other thing you need to do is, when the school was doing this, it didn't seem to be any kind of state or federal investigation into this. Because when you're doing that and you're rerouting things with the money or the intent, you should get more than a slap on the hand. There should be some kind of investigation and some charges brought forth.
Well, I agree. I absolutely agree. If you just tuned in, again, you're listening to Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. With me is Carl Mitchell, A.J. Houston, and Christopher Bunn. And we're tackling the topic straight out of the headlines. We're talking about news from across the country and across the world. And saying that, we're going to move into Japan. You know, that Fukushima nuclear plant that you know, has been spewing toxic waste for what now? It's been, what, has it been 2 years now? 3 years? 3 years.
3 years.
Time just sure flew. But anyway, that's hitting the West Coast now, y'all. I mean, we're talking about deformities in whales, deformities in fish showing up on the West Coast. And so my thing is, why are we not hearing about this on the news? And is it a cover-up? Or are they trying to cause the people on the West Coast not to panic? Why is it that we're not hearing about this? But the levels are unacceptable from what I'm hearing that they're seeing on the West Coast. Why aren't we hearing about it?
Unfortunately, because our government had interface after they had that nuclear reactor when the Japanese government did not move as expeditiously as they should have to basically, number one, try and shut it down, and then number two, try and contain the spillage of that radioactive waste. Our government went over there. We sent representatives over there. And so they knew at that point. Go ahead.
No, I said did that. No, I'm agreeing with you. I'm sorry.
So the bottom line is that pretty much since it was apparent that there was going to be some spillage and fallout, and they pretty much predicted in terms of where that waste was going to go and what it was going to affect in terms of environment, people, wildlife, and so forth. But unfortunately, other than a cover-up, I don't know what else it could be, because if our U.S. government was aware of it and didn't take the precautions so that people where that was designated that it was going to go to didn't do anything. I mean, but a lot of other countries in that region did the very same thing. They didn't tell their people.
See, But the thing is, right now, today, this is per Infowars.com, they're saying at the beach in San Francisco, background radiation is over 5 times the safe level. So I'm talking about our government today not saying anything to the people on the West Coast about there being in, you know, some danger and going to the beach. I mean, officials in San Mateo County are saying that they are baffled at the cause of the high radiation levels, saying they can't believe that it's coming from Fukushima. But, you know, from what I'm understanding, it's just too easy to do a kit, I'm trying to say, and test where it's coming from. So the fact that they're saying they're baffled, you know, that sounds like a cover-up, which to me at this point, if you're living on the West Coast and you're living near the beach and you're waiting for the government to tell you you're in danger, you're taking your life in your own hand. I say get up and do something. I mean, demand. Again, that's when it's time to rally. That's when it's time to go to the city council. That's when it's time to contact your congresspeople and your senators. I mean, don't sit there and wait for the government to tell you that it's toxic down there when there's evidence already that it's toxic down there. Don't you agree? I mean, am I wrong, y'all?
No, you're absolutely right. And the thing is that people should not be finding out second, third party, and so forth, or after somebody is actually affected by the radioactive fallout. It's a simple thing to do to notify people. And the reason when you're dealing with radioactive waste, radioactive isotopes, it is vital because most people may not understand that radioactive waste, particularly in the high concentration form that it leaks from a reactor, the minimum half-life is 30 years. So that means that even if you contain it, you seal it, and you put it away where it won't leak and won't harm anything, it takes 30 years for it to dissipate and no longer be harmful. So if it gets into the water, if it gets into other modes and then travels, it's still got a 30-year half-life. It's a little bit reduced, but it's still going to cause those very bad side effects that it does, with cancer being one of them.
And, you know, didn't we see today West Virginia was saying that there was a toxic waste somewhere in West Virginia, and they were saying it was so bad that they were telling people the water was only good for flushing toilets and putting out fires. So, of course, the drinking water on the shelves were just, you know, down to nothing. And, you know, in essence, people there in West Virginia don't have bathing water, you know, unless you buy it off the shelf, or they don't have, you know, water to do anything. I mean, brush your teeth, wash their face, nothing. And so if it's that toxic in West Virginia from a toxic chemical spill down there, what do you think this stuff from Fukushima hitting the West Coast is about? Same thing. Y'all, it's dangerous, and I would be trying to find out if it was safe to be, you know, using that water the way that you normally do if it's causing deformities in whales and fish. That's reason for caution. But I think part of the problem –
I was just going to quickly say, and in terms of that, the environmental ramifications is that what people may not understand is that the nuclear waste getting into the environment, into waters and so forth, they also become aerosolized or aerosolized. So even though people are not drinking it, they're not bathing in it, they're still being exposed to it. So it may be 10 years or 15 years before something crops up, but it's still something that is creating a problem because people are still being exposed to it, and it is still having a harmful effect.
I agree. The Japanese government has pledged 47 billion yen towards the plant cleanup. However, they are taking inexperienced homeless people down there, y'all, and taking them right off the street and recruiting them to do the cleanup. Now, that's exactly what's going on. That's just wrong. That is just wrong. I mean, and somebody was talking about it on another talk show, and they basically said, well, you know, that's a good thing. I mean, you know, somebody's got to do it, but again, taking the less fortunate. So their life is less valuable than the next person?
Well, that's like in India when they were moving computers. You know, you used to take all the monitors and old computers and send them off because of mercury that was in them.
Mm-hmm.
They had the poor in India taking the mercury out of the computers because it's harmful.
And you know what? They said in Nigeria too. And they not only conduct that practice, they actually ship secondhand appliances and computers and computer screens to Nigeria for disposal.
Oh, wow.
They are 14 million tablets, too, haven't they?
Is what?
Iodine tablets, 65 milligram, unit dose, package of 20s.
I think they help with that.
It helps block radioactive iodine from being absorbed by the thyroid gland, and is used by victims of severe nuclear accident or emergencies.
I think we all might need to stockpile some of that around, because I mean we just don't know what we're up against. I mean,
well, see, the other thing is you need to check, because I know when Chernobyl had the nuclear accident, they put concrete over miles and miles of land, and they said it was going to take 80 years before they could grow anything in the property.
Whoa. And so, you know, because they're being so irresponsible there, y'all. TEPCO, basically from what I understand, and that was the plant operator, has been caught using duct tape to patch up critical equipment around the plant. I mean, y'all, really?
Duct tape fix anything.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing. That's a service class.
Everything but nuclear waste.
Everything but, exactly. I mean, that's just, I don't know. I mean, that's just the craziest thing. I mean, you know, it seems like when you have a whole bunch of money, the regulations get more and more lax. You know what I'm saying? If you're a company, you know, with you know, billion-dollar profits or, million, you know, mega-million-dollar profits, nobody really looks in on your operation like they should. And I think
but
this
it's
is
not the regulations. It's not the regulations. They just send out a few regulators. See, what's happened so far is all these jobs where you have all these people to go check, CPS and all these other entities, they were cut back funds. So now they don't have enough people to man their complete operation. So just like the inspectors, and just like when the oil spilled over off in the Gulf, they didn't have a lot of inspectors to go out there to check it. So when it got completely out of hand, they start spending these billions of dollars and paying people in New Orleans for the money they would have made if they were fishermen, you know, the money they would have made if they did live over, you know, just all this, you know, unnatural thing. So that's what the Republican Party has done so far, is all these cutbacks. We don't see the direct effect until that area is affected by their directness.
And if someone is wondering, what are we talking about, Fukushima? Fukushima was a massive earthquake and tsunami in the nation's northeast coast, set off multiple meltdowns and nuclear plants almost 3 years ago. So if that jars your memory, that's what we're talking about with Fukushima. But AJ was just talking about what happened at the Gulf Coast. And you know, I remember what happened in the Gulf Coast. Did you see all those commercials they ran after that? All the people down there in the Gulf Coast, they were so happy. And, you know, things haven't been greater, and we all got jobs. Remember those commercials?
But Terry, those weren't commercials. Those were excerpts from the movie with Steven Seagal in it when they had that oil spill in Alaska. They were saying the same exact thing.
You know what they did? I mean, it was sad.
Honestly, they were saying the same exact thing. Just go watch that movie. It's I can't think of the name. Steven Seagal, there's an oil spill. There was an oil spill, and he was doing his commercials. It was the same exact thing he was saying. I was laughing because I was like, wow, they at least pulled it from the right show.
I mean, it was almost as though saying, well, you know what, if I got cancer, at least he gave me a job. You know, it was, I'm sorry. That was
well, funny. You know, kind of on that note, a lot of folks may not know, but when the U.S. invasion of Iraq occurred and they had actually set off some of the oil fields and oil refineries, who do you think they got to go in there and actually put those fires out and then breathe in all those toxic fumes? They were what's called third country or third world nationalists. In other words, these are poor individuals, Nigeria, India, Sri Lanka, so forth, that they basically offer them more money per capita than they're making because they're in the poverty line, and they ship these people to different places when they have issues going on that are quote-unquote dangerous without proper training, without proper equipment, and they have them go in basically as slaves, drones, and carry that mission out. But then in the end, a lot of those folks then go back home. They end up having cancer. They end up having a lot of respiratory problems. So it is a common, unfortunate practice that happens.
And, y'all, if you wonder, well, why didn't I hear that on the news? Because a lot of times people listen to Senate State and go, I ain't heard that before. Well, the problem is mainstream media is not reporting on it, y'all, because Japan is issuing 10-year sentences to anyone caught talking about Fukushima. Go figure. I'm sorry. That's crazy.
Tenement Square.
So,
I think Tenement Square, you know what I'm saying? It's been happening over the government of a couple of times. These governments where they say you can't say anything, and in America we say something. There you can't, because they're not playing.
I said 10 years. Automatic 10 years if you call talking. So if you wonder, well, why come the Japanese people ain't saying nothing? That's why the Japanese people aren't saying anything. Okay, y'all, we got to move quickly because we got to pull Miss Maggie Rose up at 9:25. Let's talk about very quickly. This is not a story we want to rush on, and we've already reached out to her father and her mother, and we're hoping to get them on the show very soon. So we're just going to do an overview on this story, and we're hoping very, very soon to get them to come on center stage and tell us about this. We're going to talk about Private First Class Lavinia Johnson. She was in the U.S. Army, found raped and murdered in her tent in July of 2005. She was in Iraq. So they were calling it a suicide, you know. And so at first I think the parents weren't aware, you know, until they, under the Freedom of Information Act, requested information about the death of their daughter because, you know, they were just told, you know, it was a suicide. And then they later found out that her nose was broken, her teeth were loosened, her eyes were black, and her genitals had some type of corrosive material on them. What do y'all think?
Well, you left out one thing, Terry. She was supposedly had committed suicide with her M16.
Oh, yes, that's a major point, major point.
Which makes it really hard, because I find it's hard to shoot yourself with M16, I'm sorry.
I think they said she shot herself in the mouth, and she was only 5'1", isn't that correct? So she'd have to booby trap that gun, in essence, or that M16, in order to shoot herself in the mouth, correct?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how she'd do it. I really don't.
Okay.
If that was me now.
So it's darn near impossible is what you're saying.
I'm not saying impossible, but highly improbable.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. That's what her parents are saying, and her father, Dr. John Johnson, has vowed he is not shutting up, and he is going to get some justice for his daughter, and I absolutely don't blame him, and we are going to try very hard to get them on the show. She was the first female soldier from Missouri to die in Iraq. She was the daughter of Dr. John Johnson and his wife, Linda Johnson. She grew up in Florissant, Missouri, honor student who enlisted right after graduation and was sent to Iraq. She was in Blade, Iraq, 8 weeks before her death on July 19, 2005. What are y'all's thoughts?
Well, the one thing that I know before I really make any comments, the one thing that I'm going to try and do is actually see if there's any way to review the autopsy, and then there's a couple other things that affect what goes into an investigation. The military also, when any significant or definitely any death or injury occurs, there's what's called a serious incident report that is mandated that has to be done. And then there also is supposed to be a preliminary command investigation. So I'm going to try and basically review or get a hold of as much information as I can, because that will better qualify me to make comments, hopefully, when you're able to get the parents on. And then I think, you know, I'll be able to maybe chime in on some things and then listen to what they have to say, because the other thing that would be important is to know what documents that they actually were given or that they had available or that they were refused, because that makes a significant difference in terms of looking at that, the obvious thing in terms of some type of cover-up or something that was done maliciously.
I appreciate that. And we are claiming that show in the upcoming weeks, because Carrie really goes in hard when she sees a show that she thinks is good for Center Stage, and we're definitely feeling that's one of them. And so, but they're saying that in June of 2008, the House Service Committee said they were looking into Johnson's death, but not committing at all to a formal investigation. I thought that was very interesting. So they did not commit themselves to do a formal investigation, but they did say that they were looking into it. So hopefully her parents can get justice in that particular situation. I'm getting some background noise from somebody. But, you know, the thing is, why is it that women get such a hard rap in the military? Is it like a good old boy system for the most part? AJ's been in the military. I know Christopher's in there. Carl, have you ever been in the military?
No, I've not been in the military. I've had friends, best friends, stuff retired from the military, but I've never been in.
Okay. So y'all can give us a little insight as to women in the military. Is that a harder road to hoe for a woman than it is a man being in the military services?
Well,
sure.
Just recently, there were, I think, 800 cases brought up as far as women being raped over in Afghanistan, Iraq, and over in, you know, during the last couple of incursions or wars that we had. And they were trying to bring it 800 rape cases. And a lot of times the person went before, you know, went up the chain of command, and the commander just kind of pushed it to the side and act like there was an investigation, but nothing was done. So you'll probably hear about that sometime this year, because it's taking its way through the government.
You know, they're trying to take the prosecutor proceeding out of the military's hand for these rape cases and sexual abuse in the military, because you know, those commanders who's over those posts weren't, you know, probably, you know, doing their jobs and whatnot. And also had even been accused of some type of sexual misconduct themselves. So, you know, we've listed that in the media too. So, but that was a big argument about taking it out of their hand. I think Elizabeth Warren was leading that BLL, in which they was really fighting against it, saying that it would discredit the military and that they thought that they could handle their own business or whatnot, but they weren't getting the job done. You know, the women were steadily losing, you know, and afraid to, you know, report rape. And when they did, sometimes, you know, the officer himself was an abuser. So.
Sure, and that is true. And the Army has gone to, they actually, it's been in the regulation, but the Army has taken a stronger stance on zero tolerance. Now, does that translate to mean that every commander, every first sergeant, every platoon sergeant is going to comply with that? No, it doesn't. And unfortunately, when there are commands who shirk the responsibility and they don't, I mean, if somebody brings an allegation to you, you're bound by Army regulation that you have to investigate it. It's not a maybe, maybe not, or I think it's going this way or that way, no matter if it's a male or female soldier. That's kind of one of the problem, I think, whether it's in the civilian or the military, but definitely the military. And then the next thing is that the military, I know because I work out of the surgeon's office, and the military has now instituted what's called SHARP resiliency administrators. And what these individuals do is SHARPS is a sexual harassment, assault, response, and prevention program. So they are trying to do a lot of things, but then I do agree. I'm not sidestepping or shirking. There's two big things wrong and going awry in the military, and that's suicide and sexual assault and sexual abuse and sexual harassment. So these things do need to be dealt with, and there's commanders are taught, they're trained, but they don't always comply with what they should do in terms of allegations. and they're supposed to be investigating these. They're supposed to bring JAG and the Sharps and the representative into the picture when any of these allegations are made. And so soldiers can make a formal or informal complaint, but in a lot of cases, because it's factual, it's statistics, they're not taken seriously all the time, and they should be.
Well, you know, we got a few minutes before we're supposed to get a phone in from Maggie Roach, the mother of young Ashton, who was basically, I want to call it castrated. Is that a good word for what happened? Would y'all call it castrated?
That
yeah.
is it.
When he went in for circumcision. So we're waiting for her to call in about 5 minutes. But before we do, let's talk a little bit about the young lady, and her name escapes me in my notes for some reason, are not where they're supposed to be. But what was the name of the young lady who was put on life support after she went in for a tonsillectomy and some other issues that they were supposed to be dealing with sleep apnea, and she ended up on life support. And the hospital wanted to disconnect the life support, and the family said no, and the family was lucky enough to have attorneys, and so the attorney stopped the life support from being pulled, and now the family has moved her to a private facility where they're now having her on a feeding tube. So when I've been through this situation myself with a family member, and it's a very tough decision when the doctors come in and say all brain activity has ceased, which technically they declared that legally dead, and Christopher can speak more on that. And so that was a very hard decision because I'm looking like, are y'all sure? You know, can we look at the reports with you? You know, can we go pray? We did all that, y'all. I mean, we did all that. And still at the end of the day, we signed off the paperwork to say, okay, you know, we're going to trust that y'all are right. And so, you know, that this is it. And so this particular family was not able to do that. So when do you say that the person is gone? When is it when the doctors say it? Or when do you say it?
Well, the young lady's name I think is Jahi McMath in
okay.
Oakland, California, and yeah, it was a routine tonsillectomy approximately December 9th, and then immediately after there were some complications. She began coughing up blood. She actually had a heart attack and she lost consciousness. And then at that point, that's when they declared her brain dead. And you're right. Most hospitals, most medical facilities have a protocol, and they usually have a policy that's usually designed by the American Medical Association, but also the state. And basically, when a person is brain dead, at some point, the hospital can make the determination to discontinue life support. Now, that's with a few caveats. Usually, the family is supposed to be allowed to be counseled, to be evaluated, to concur, but if there's no power of attorney or no one there to speak on the behalf of the hospital, unfortunately, the hospital can make that decision and or go get a court order. But in this case, I think because she went in for something routine and I didn't hear a lot about what was investigated that may have created this, whether it was just complications, natural, if it was malpractice, I don't know, but it doesn't seem like enough has been put into looking into that. But to answer your question, the bottom line is that there is no point. Once brain activity is ceased, it then becomes a what are you going to do? Not an absolute where this has to be done, but I think in this case, under the circumstances, the hospital should have been willing to work with the family but I think they didn't want to because it's probably pending a lawsuit for malpractice once the final verdict is in. So I think it's going to be up to the individual. It's going to be between the insurance, what is affordable, and at the end of the day, hopefully there's a reasonable consensus or time allotted for that person to possibly make their recovery before they're taken off life support.
Now, she went in for tonsil surgery in December 9th and began bleeding heavily before going to cardiac arrest, it says here, and being declared brain dead December 12th.
Was she 11 or 13?
Well, yeah, because it was 3 days later that she actually, it was 3 days later that, yes, she actually was declared brain dead, but I think it was the day after or the second day after that she began coughing up blood and then had a heart attack, lost her consciousness, but then she was declared brain dead 3 days later. So she had some brain activity, but it decreased.
Apparently. quit. But apparently she'd been moved to an undisclosed facility. And they said the procedure was a success and that that she's getting the treatment that her family believes she should have gotten 28 days ago when doctors at Shrewsbury Hospital, Oakland, first declared her brain dead.
Well, see, that's the feeding tube now. Isn't that what they did?
That's why I'm saying until they had actually made a further disposition and done some investigating and research, I believe the hospital should have allowed them to stay there to try and make the family and Jahi as comfortable as possible and allow her to stay on life support and give her a feeding tube because it wasn't going to hurt anything. If she wasn't going to make it, then she wasn't going to make it. But I think they were trying to pull rank and just take her off of it because of the circumstances.
Open a new account.
Somebody. Are you just kidding? Okay, we got some feedback from somebody.
Yeah, that was me. That sounded like something was going on my screen. Now, go ahead. I'm with you.
If you just tuned in, you can come to the stage tonight. I'm Gary Hines, your host. With me is Carl Mitchell, A.J. Houston, and Christopher Bynes. And we're tackling the subject straight out of the headlines. And we're about to talk with Ms. Maggie Rhodes, who's joined us. And we're going to talk about the fact that she took her son, Ashton, into the Christ Community Health Services on Broad Avenue in Memphis for what should have been a routine procedure, a circumcision. And something went terribly wrong for a procedure that should have lasted 20 minutes, and we're going to let her pick up the story from there. Good evening, Ms. Rhodes. Thank you for joining us Center Stage.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, how are you? I'm sorry?
You can go ahead.
Okay. With me is A.J. Houston, Carl Mitchell, and you know Christopher Bynes. And so we want to basically spotlight or talk about what happened to baby Ashton. So can you tell us what happened? It appears that Ashton was taken in at about 3 months to have a circumcision at Christ Community Health Services in Memphis. And what happened at that point?
I went in on August the 14th for a routine circumcision in Memphis, Tennessee at Christ Community Health Clinic. And when I arrived at the doctor, I went to the back and she told me that the circumcision was going to take about 20 minutes. She asked me, my friend Gabriel, and my daughter to step out in the hallway. We stepped outside in the hallway, and that's when I noticed 20 minutes had turned into an hour. My baby was in there screaming like life and death. It wasn't no tomorrow. I went around the corner to the restroom. I can hear him screaming off another hall. It wasn't even a baby cry. I came back out the restroom. I started knocking on the door. I was asking her, is everything okay with my son? And as I was knocking on the door, she was saying that, well, we wrapping up everything. It's going to be, give us like a couple of minutes. We wrapping it up now. So, 2 hours went by, 3 hours and 30 minutes, and as I kept knocking on the door, she kept saying everything was going to be okay, and they wrapping up, everything's going well, they just cleaning up some of the, you know, the circumcision or whatever. And so she never did let us go back into the room. She handed my son out in the hallway. And she was like, everything went well with his circumcision. Don't remove his bandage for 4 or 5 days.
Ooh.
And she was like, okay then, thank you, have a nice day. And we left. I got my baby back. He was still screaming, crying. And when I got my son back, I went home, and my sister, when we walked into the house, she asked me, she was like, what happened? Why is he still crying? And I was like, oh, he just got circumcised, and he you know, he don't want nobody to touch him at this point. So my sister was like, well, he's not supposed to be crying like this, so I'm going to open it up and see what happened. So I went in the kitchen and started cooking for my smaller kids. And when I was in the kitchen cooking, my sister came in there and she told me that, you know, your baby don't have a penis. And I immediately ran to my, I was like, stop playing, you know, like, because people joke a lot. And I immediately ran, I heard my cousin who went to the clinic with me. She just bust down, started crying, screaming and hollering. And she was like, they wrong for doing that baby like that. They wrong for that. And so I ran to my room and I looked because I felt like at that point it was serious. I looked, the pamper was covering blood, the bandage was covering blood that she put over him. She put down a gauze, it was like the blood had soaked through the gauze out the pamper. And so I seen all the blood, I immediately grabbed my son, I seen that his legs were swollen, and I took him to Lebona Children's Hospital. It was like when no help in that hospital that night. You know, I felt like I was violated. My son was violated as well. You know, they called every doctor.
Are you saying at Lebona or are you saying at Christ Community Health Center Services?
At Lebona's and Christ Community Health Clinic.
Why at Lebona's? What happened at Lebona's?
When I took my son to Lebona's, they immediately tied him to the bed because they said that his thing was up on him. I guess, like, from the screaming, when they did his breathing, he couldn't hardly breathe at a point because he was, like, gagging for air. So they immediately took him to the bed. They lost focus in taking care of my son. The doctor and the nurse that was on duty, they were so busy focusing on bringing every doctor and every nurse into the room looking at what had happened to my son besides just caring for the problem or going straight to A point B with my baby. And I felt like it wasn't any help in the hospital. I felt violated as well as, you know, I'm just saying my family felt violated because, you know, that nurse or that doctor taking care of a patient, shouldn't everybody in the hospital know why my baby was at the hospital that night?
I see what you're saying, and I absolutely agree with that. So basically you're saying that, and it happens a lot in hospitals, where, you know, for whatever reason, interns haven't ever seen particular cases, and so when something new or odd comes into the hospital, they all rush to see it so that they can say they witnessed or experienced a certain type of case. And so I know that happens, and that was unfortunate. Was Lebona able to help little Ashton?
It was like I felt like I really made, like, a big issue about it. I felt like I was violated because that night they were so busy focusing. They was, like, missing the point. They didn't run any tests on my son to see, you know, if he had lost a lot of blood. They didn't run any tests to see was his blood level up. Did he set up an infection? I found out, 2 weeks later that Ashton had a bad infection from a hospital when I had to completely working, take my son to Mississippi because he was struggling to breathe. I took him back to Lebona's, and they refused to see him because they already had keyed in the system with Christ Community that I had a lawsuit in the state of Tennessee with malpractice. So Lamona's refused to see him. I had to not go to work, and I had to quit my job and take my son to Greenville, Mississippi, to get the proper medical treatment. And they was like, ain't no telling how long he had an infection side up. So I felt like I was violated in the state of Tennessee at Lamona's Children's Hospital and also at Christ Community Health Clinic.
Yeah. see that. So I understand now poor baby Ashton has to urinate out of a hole in his penis rather than the normal way that a man would urinate.
Yes. When he used it, the hole there, it start closing, but a normal man urine goes up and then go out. Ashton urine comes straight back on him.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And so you have to try to keep pample change, try not to let him set up any diaper rash, or, you know, he can't stand no pampers on him. Like, once he about the urine, you gonna know about it.
Wow. Wow.
And
wow.
So the next day I went up to the clinic after I left LaBonna Children's Hospital that night. That morning, we left Le Bonner's that morning. I went over to the clinic. They wasn't open yet. I stayed in the parking lot, and I waited till they opened up the door. I sat there, and I went in. I had my phone. I was like, y'all, I got to record this because I don't want nobody saying that I said nothing at the way. So I'm letting y'all know that y'all is being recorded. And I was like, what happened to my baby penis? The doctor, when she walked in, she knew exactly the reason why I came back to that clinic. And I was like, I feel like I was violated. You could have said when I left the clinic, my baby was fine. If I would have waited 4 or 5 days, you could have argued and you could have been like, I tried to perform circumcision on my own child and cut off his penis. When he left the clinic, he was fine. That's why you asked me not to remove that bandage for 4 or 5 days. And I felt like she was like, no, 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 no. That wasn't the case. I said, I feel like deep in my heart that was the case. You were trying to frame me for your mess up. And I was like, you are exposed. Like, right as of now, you have been exposed. And I was like, deep down in my heart, it wasn't an honest mistake. I was like, an honest mistake. I should have been notified that my son lost his penis that day. I was there inside the clinic. Y'all didn't even have decent enough to send my child to the hospital. You sent him back home to me to die?
Yeah.
And she was like, it was an honest mistake. I promise you I am so sorry. I sat up all night wondering if I made a mistake on your baby or not. I have all this on tape recorder. She was saying that she apologized. He lost a lot of blood. She had lost track once he started losing blood. She got off focus because he was going in and out. Like, he wasn't with them or so. I was like, excuse me. So
basically, are you saying he could have died on the table based on what she was saying?
In other words, in so many words, this is what she was saying. I have all this on tape recorder, and my lawyer has the tape recorder now. And I'm like, you didn't tell me nothing. You just saw my child home with me to let him die on me? Or you didn't even have decent enough to say, ma'am, I made a mistake on your baby. You know, people are forgetful. And I know mistakes, it's a possibility that mistakes can happen. But I felt like I felt my son because when you, now you just, don't know who hands to put your children in or who to trust, like daycare. I can't send my baby to the daycare crying the way that he cried, and he already been through all this in his lifetime. I have a child with special needs. She have a bad heart. And I'm like, you know, they had to do her open heart surgery. After that, they had to actually do the open heart surgery in front of me because it's hard to trust, like, doctors nowadays.
So you mean Ashton has had an open heart surgery since the surgery?
No,
the-
my 6-year-old daughter had open heart surgery.
Gotcha, okay.
And they had to perform the procedure in front of me. She had to have immediate open heart surgery, but I wouldn't go through with it until they, like, show me, you know, you have to show me what you're doing to my child now. I can't. I'm not one of those parents just for to put my kids in anybody's hands, no.
Well, Ms. Rose, what has all of this done to you, the stress of it all?
Like, I went all the way down behind it. I lost my job. They cut all my assistance off. They said that I'm not eligible for Medicaid anymore. I'm still not getting Medicaid right now. My little girl was getting disability for her heart. They wrote a letter saying that she's no longer disabled. It's just been stressful, you know. And 2 weeks later, DHS popped up at my house saying that I was a bad parent. Then when she came out, something was wrong with my son, baby, the latch was messed up on it. And she was like, well, you're going to have to get a new baby bed. So I got a new baby bed that Friday. They never came back out to my home. It's just been like a lot of harassment. A week after DHS left my home, the next week I was involved in a car accident. Got the report back on my vehicle. My brake lines was cut. So
what?
It's just been a lot, a whole lot.
Your brake lines were cut on your car?
Yes.
Oh, Lord. Oh, wow. You are in our prayers. Christopher, you were saying what?
Yes, I was going to say hi. How you doing, Sister Maggie? How's it going?
All right.
Good. You know, could you, if you wouldn't mind, could you tell the panel and also the listening audience kind of how things are going for you now and what you're dealing with in terms of a legal battle
feedback.
As well as a survival battle?
Right now, well, my case saying that they refusing, the hospital and the clinic are refusing to give up the medical records. A judge has subpoenaed them. They still refusing to give the medical records to the judge. So I don't know where he's going right now after they didn't refuse to give the medical records to the judge. I am in the process of moving to a better place or safer environment for my children where don't nobody know where I live, because when I went on the news, stuff started happening. So I'm just...
We are praying.
In need of moving right now.
Ms. Maggie, have you set up a PayPal account in Ashton's name that people can donate to what's going on?
Well, I had to use my email address because with the age, you have to have, like, a email address. So I just used my email address and signed up a PayPal through that.
Okay, so how can somebody donate to your PayPal account?
It's Maggie Rose.
M-A-G-G-I-E?
Uh-huh. Rose.
R-H-O-D-E-S. Uh-huh.
47.
Mm-hmm.
At yahoo.com.
Okay, let me call that back out. Y'all listen. If there was ever a cause that y'all needed to donate to, it would be this. He needs a fighting chance. It looks like little Ashton has been through so much already. And we all got a little to give, you know, give something to help her get situated in a safe place. Whoever cut those brakes, God's going to deal with them. But right now she needs to get to a safe location, and if we can do something, we need to. And so you're saying we can send money to your PayPal account by using the email address maggierodes47@yahoo.com, that being M-A-G-G-I-E. RHODES47@yahoo.com. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. Yes,
okay.
Ma'am.
How is little Ashton doing today?
He's still struggling. Like, he's up all night.
Oh,
when he urinates, you would know about it. He's kicking. He's at the age. He knows pain now, so.
He doesn't what now?
He's in a lot of pain now, so.
Wow. Is there a petition in place to close down Christ Community Health Services? I mean, what's going on with that? Have you got a petition in place? Do you need help with somebody writing you a petition? Or does your attorney advise against that? What are you asking the public, or what do you need the public to do for you today?
Well, I feel like, you know, me being honest, I'm just going to keep it real. My attorney, he's not, like, really doing that much communication, you know, like, with me and, about my case. And he's supposed to notify me today, and he was, like, he was going to help me, like, to move or whatever, and he hasn't even notified me or got back. So right now, I don't even know, you know, what's going on with my case or what's the holdup or none of that. Or have he filed the petition against the clinic or not?
Okay. We'll help. Well, I understand Brother Bruns is helping you with that, and we will get with Brother Bruns and see what we can do to help you with that particular situation. Can we ask a question so that everybody understands? Why wasn't little Ashton circumcised when he was a baby, when he was first born?
When you, like, have a fever in a hospital, when he came out the womb, he came in and he was like, he had a fever. So they couldn't do his circumcision. He had stayed in the hospital like an extra week.
Okay, so he had some complications when he came in.
Yes.
When you went to Christ Community Health Services, you know, the Bible always says warning comes before destruction. Did you sense anything about it, or had you heard anything about it that made you wonder if they were the type place that you wanted to do something at? And I'm not blaming you, but I'm just wondering, you know, did you get any kind of sense as a mother that maybe something wasn't right about the facility?
Like, I noticed that the old staff that they had, they all moved to, like, Nashville and other places. They had all new doctors. And I had got a gut feeling in my body about the circumcision, but I'm like, my 2-year-old son got circumcised there, so, you know, I might as well get Ashton circumcised at the side clinic. And me not knowing, I'm thinking these people are actually professionals, you know, like a circumcision is like pulling up the foreskin and just clipping it and not cutting off a penis. And in my right mind, I'm not thinking that, you know, these people don't know what they're doing. When you go somewhere and they're just like, if you come to my restaurant and I'm cooking, you expect me to know what I'm doing, right, if I have a restaurant open.
Right, right.
So I feel like, you know, I expect the doctors, you know, that's what y'all go to school for. That's what we pay for. Y'all to, you don't know what we doing. We're not no dogs or animals, but then you don't inspire me no people.
Oh, I agree.
So I feel like, you know.
Does anyone know if CCHF had any type of record of botched circumcisions or surgeries that, you know, were going wrong prior to Ashton's case? Has anything like that come out?
I have no idea. I feel like, you know, everybody's trying to keep this on a hush-hush. I want to know how could a story get advertising or of a boy hugging a teacher, and this baby in Memphis' penis got cut out, and this baby been aired.
I see what you're saying.
And this story that made world news, baby, I was watching the news today, world news, and a baby was caught, Tyler was caught cursing. And it's a baby, hello, America, it's a baby penis got cut off. And this ain't even got no attention. But y'all so big and worrying about a baby cursing. And
I think
sometimes
people don't realize how political the news is. So it's a possibility somebody at CCHS maybe has some connections with the media, the local media or something, that caused a blackout on that story. But that won't stop it from going viral, trust me. So don't worry about that. Trust me, there's other ways in which you can definitely get little Ashton's story out, and we'll definitely put you in contact with some other people who can do some.
Yeah, and I feel like my story was hidden in Memphis. The next day, I left the clinic. I went to Fox 13 and gave them a story and asked me why ain't nobody called me or contacted me or heard about my son's story to Channel 5 aired it in October. August to October, my son's story went even nowhere. They was like, well, we got to have the lawsuit filed. Y'all got pictures, all of y'all face. Y'all have two pictures of my son and his body, and y'all mean to tell me y'all can't put out this story? This is the truth. This is what happened.
A lot of times,
and
like I said,
this news is so messed up.
The news is very political. AJ, Carl, Christopher, do you all have any questions for Maggie Rhodes, for Ms. Rhodes?
I think you asked everything. My condolences for sure. I'm at a loss for words.
Yeah.
But I definitely need a petition and definitely need to call a lawyer to see if the lawyer's actually doing anything, because that should be some lawyers definitely willing to take your case. That would actually be on the case, be in the case, and have the case in the media too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And what we're doing is I've been talking to I call her Sister Maggie, but Miss Rhodes, because what I was relating to her is anytime you deal with the system, whether it's in the civil matter or criminal justice system, there's always a delay. There's things that you have to understand about the system so that you don't take it personally. And I think that she is very resilient. She's been working real hard, and I can't really speak for her attorney, but I have spoken with her attorney, Mr. Attorney Sweet. Part of the problem is that when you deal with the South, when you deal with Memphis, you're inundated with media outlets that the traditional white media outlets are controlled. And then the other problem is that the attorney that you're dealing with probably has never dealt with such a unique case like yours. And then also he's an attorney. So he is in that same minefield with a lot of other attorneys who probably have his ear, and he's also thinking about, you know, the district or the state's attorney and some other things, because it's like feast or famine. So it sounds, from what talking to him and listening to him previously, he is trying, but this is quite a bit for him to swallow. And then, two, it comes down to if an individual has a lot of money or influence, or they have a particular influential last name, you're going to get more service and latitude. But like Carrie is saying, I think we can still, based on shows like hers and others, we can still go through the underground way, or the way that we can do it at the grassroots level. And we're going to definitely continue to pray for you, to support you as well. And that's, I think, a critical piece here, because I just want everybody to understand she's really at a very financial fork in the road because of having to care for her son and what has happened. She's even had disparities in her employment, not because she's lazy, she's the furthest thing from that, but everybody's on the take. And you never know who's being whispered to do this or to do that. So she's upholding, got an uphill battle, but with the Lord's help and with support, we're going to be able to make it.
And Ms. Rose, we'd like to say to you, we're going to put our arms around you as well. And any friend of Christopher's is a friend of ours, and we will do all we can. AJ Khufu is a civil rights activist. AJ is a freedom fighter. I'm a freedom fighter. And we will do all we can to help you get the word out, to, you know, get some financial support for you to get situated in a new place. And, you know, anytime you want to come back and give us an update, you know, Christopher will make it happen, and we will do all we can to make sure Christopher gets a better start than he has so far. Is that okay?
Yes, ma'am. I wasn't saying anything about I'm not trying to talk bad about my lawyer, but I'm not, you know, I know he's on a bargain. All lawyers work together. And I'm not, you know, I used to work in the circuit clerk office for 10 whole years. And I know how everything goes. But my biggest issue is, you know, how could a story blow up from a child cursing and a child hugging a teacher, and this baby over here, penis is cut off? That is my biggest concern. That is, like, I am so angry, you know, like, why is my baby story ain't out there? Why, you know, that's my question. Like, you know, why is everybody trying to cover this up?
Well, sometimes everything is in God's time, Ms. Rhodes. So, you know, I think it's going to happen. I really do. Oh, you were trying to say something. I'm sorry.
Yeah, what state is she located in? What state is she located in? That case occurred in? What state did
that's
that
Memphis,
violation take place? Huh?
That's Memphis, Tennessee. Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis, Tennessee.
Right.
But if I were her, I would have contacted Willa Gary. If her attorney don't do anything, she should contact Willa Gary on that case. She's in Mississippi. It wouldn't be good to contact Willa Gary in Texas, because Texas have limits on stuff. But Mississippi probably is a state that she should contact somebody like Willa Gary. She's go online and look up WillaGary.com. A lot of people know who Willa Gary. Are you all familiar with who Willa Gary
yeah.
is?
But we don't talk negative about her attorney, because we, you know, you know, we don't want him to think we're not trying to work with him, because that's not what we're doing, right, Carl? We're just.
What I did find out, just and it's right, and I agree with you. That's why I actually called him, because we had a dialogue for about 10 minutes. I told him about my case. I told him about being wrongfully. I told him about taking poison. Everything that I was under, and I made some not as an attorney or legal advice, I just made some constructive recommendations to him, i.e., you know, that if he wanted to, I could send him the information of how I created a website, the things that I did to help myself and so forth. Because most people, once they're thrown into a particular criminal or civil mix and they've never been in that, they don't really know necessarily what to do or how to go about it. So he was receptive on that. And I am going to forward him the information that we discussed, so he has a broader idea of maybe to be some helpful things. And I said, if there's some things that you think are okay and I could actually create it for you and send it to you for you and Sister Maggie to prove, that would be fine. I'm willing to do anything to help. So it's just because of the type of case, and it's also different because if you're on contingent versus fee, my attorney was that way, but then he went to fee. So honestly, I mean, my case cost me about $2,000 a month that I am paying an attorney, and that's at a reduced rate. He reduces the rate from $275 to $100 an hour. So it takes a little understanding the process, and not that Mr. Attorney Sweet is not. It's just it's a lot to, I think, process for one attorney who may not be used to this type of case, but I think he's trying to do his best.
I tell you what we're going to do, Ms. Rose, off the air – we're going to get with you, and the four of us are going to brainstorm and come up with ideas that we can help your attorney move forward, or anything that we can do to help or assist him. We'll be glad to do that and show maybe that can help a little bit. And we're going to, again, ask anyone who's willing to help Ms. Rhodes to go to her PayPal account, MaggieRhodes47@yahoo.com. That's MaggieRhodes47@yahoo.com. Again, thank you, Ms. Rhodes, for being with us, and we will be in contact with you, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Listen, y'all, that's going to have to be the final word. This has been a great show. We covered a lot of ground, y'all. We covered so much, I can't even repeat it. But, again, thank you to Maggie Rhodes for being with us. Again, the panel, y'all are always so awesome. I love you guys, AJ Houston, Christopher Buns, Carl Mitchell. Y'all are the best. Also, y'all, reminder, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. Also, y'all, remember, we're here each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. This is what we do. We break down the news from across the country and across the world, and we also talk to great people like Maggie Rhodes about stories that we think you'll be interested in, and hopefully we're going to get Ms. Rhodes some help. Please, y'all, I ask you, I beg you guys, please, if it's only $5, put something in that PayPal account. You know, that won't kill anybody. Let's try to get Ashton a better start than he had so far. So, again, thank you to Maggie Rhodes for being with me, my panel, AJ Houston, Carl Mitchell, and Christopher Bonds. Thank you, the audience, for listening, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.